author Frederick S. Lane, freelance journalist, author, and sometimes guest of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. We'll talk about why in an election year voters must pay particular attention to what kind of judiciary the next president will appoint. Tune in to The Court and the Cross, Thursday, July 24th at 9:30 a.m.
I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years, I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, cliques, and social coteries. That's me. Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be happy?
Are listening to The Underground. It is July 23rd, 2008, and as you may know, this month's Underground show is about virtual reality. This term is not solid in its definition, but according to Wikipedia, virtual reality, or VR, is technology which allows a user to interact with a computer-simulated environment, be it a real or imagined one. We, the KBOO Youth Collective, took virtual reality to be an umbrella for many different kinds of this said technology. Different forms of virtual reality could include internet role-playing games, electronic music, online social networking and dating sites, and military-utilized simulator training games. Wikipedia also describes VR to be generally a visual and sometimes aural experience. Virtual reality, as we have come to know it, is its own environment, practically independent from real reality, aside from its reliance on human intelligence to create and operate within it. All right, and I'm going to pass the mic over to Zoe.
Okay. Thank you. What is this? Thank you. Sorry, we're trying to find a piece, but there we go. The Out and About Teen Camp from Southwest Community Center came to KBOO on a field trip, and we asked them what they thought virtual reality was. There we go. Thank you. 1 second.
Hello, my name is Adam McGoy. I'm 12 years old. How are you today? This is KBOO Radio. Virtual reality is most basically a fake reality. It's virtual. Example is like video games, for example. Because people have a way to create something or do something that isn't real, it seems enjoyable to them. That is the most basic reason of virtual reality.
To me, virtual reality is just like a made-up world, basically, like made a computer, like how Adam said. People could use it to, like, escape their real world, you know, or just for fun.
Basically, I think that virtual reality is the way that you perceive the world and the way that you can kind of make it and how you see everything and how everything looks to you. I think that virtual reality is pretty much anything that you want to make it.
That's pretty cool. I don't even know what virtual reality is. I just like doing this.
Ditto.
This is the Out and About Teen Camp from the Southwest Community Center, and this is our backstage pass week, and we're visiting the KBOO radio station. Thank you so much for giving us this tour of the station, and hopefully KBOO will continue to keep doing what it's doing.
All right. Thank you to Emily Young of the KBOO for setting up the Out and About Teen Camp tour. And did you know that decisions in the real world may be affected by experiences in the virtual world? A series of tests conducted at Stanford University suggests that images seen in a virtual environment can have a lasting impact on the viewer. For example, people who watched their avatars overeat and then gain weight and are more likely to adopt a weight loss plan in real life. And next we have in the studio a live interview conducted by a KBU Youth Collective member. So stay tuned.
Okay. Hello. My name's Garrett, and I'm here with one of my good friends, Chelsea. And we're talking about the pros and cons and some of the effects that social networking websites have on our teenage culture. And one of the most you know, obviously popular sites is MySpace, which I'm sure many of you have heard of. MySpace, if you don't know, many of you older people might not know, MySpace is a site where you can go on and for free you can register for an account. And the purpose is to basically
create a profile.
Yeah, just create a profile, and you can talk to friends, you can add friends, and you can
write blogs and
give people comments on and upload your own pictures and videos, you know, what have you. It's pretty much free. It's your space, basically. But we've noticed that it's almost an entirely different world in its own, and that it has a few negative effects as well as positive effects. So, Chelsea, what do you think some of the good things are that come out of MySpace?
The good things I have to say is for local bands trying to get big, you know,
yeah,
like huge advertisement for them. People just can go to the music section and search for any genre or basically anything they want to and find a good band that they'd like to listen to.
Yeah, it really has, because there are plenty of independent bands out there that have become popular because of MySpace, and there are plenty of up-and-coming bands that have that just in local areas that put their music on there and become popular within the community. What else do you think?
Businesses. Like, my cousin works for this business called Picnic.com. It's kind of like Photo Bucket. And it's just a small business. They're actually just kind of doing it for fun. And they go to, like, people and just tell them to test it out. And, you know, it just helps out with businesses trying to get big also.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So we have musicians and we have entrepreneurs who are just, like, really getting into MySpace. And they're getting, they're just making it. But, I also observed that one thing about MySpace is that if you're too shy to actually, like, talk to somebody, like, in person, you can, it's, for some reason or another, just easier to talk to them on MySpace for a little while before you actually go up and, you know, actually talk to them in person. But one of the bad things I've observed about that is that it can be extremely awkward when you get to talk to them in person, as I've come to see. But MySpace, plenty of people meet their partners on MySpace. My friend Haley, she met her boyfriend of 7 months on MySpace. I met her on MySpace. So I don't know about you. I'm sure you've gone through the same thing. You've seen that.
I don't know. I don't really talk to people I don't really know. I like to meet people in person because, like you said, it would be extremely awkward just talking to someone, and then once you meet them, it would be awkward.
Yeah, so you want to kind of keep that in moderation.
And you don't want to sound lame, like, oh, remember that one conversation on MySpace that we had?
Yeah, I know, you never talk about that. But you do, Chelsea, keep in contact with your old friends from Texas, don't you?
Yes, I talk to them a lot lately. Like, it beats calling, because I hate talking on the phone so much.
Me too.
So it's just a lot easier just to message them anytime, and, you know, when you're calling, you always feel like you're afraid that you're going to interrupt something.
Okay. So, there you have it. Those are some of the things that are popular things that are involved in MySpace nowadays. So, thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys. Another little factoid here. According to Wikipedia, virtual crime or in-game crime refers to a virtual criminal act that takes place in a massively multiplayer online game, or MMOG. The huge time and effort invested into such games can lead online crime to spill over into real-world crime, and even blur the distinctions between the two. Some countries have introduced special police investigation units to cover such virtual crimes. South Korea is one such country and looked into 22,000 cases in the first 6 months of 2003. All right, I'm going to hand it back over to Zoe.
Thank you. Now we're going to have a live interview done by Brianna. Okay.
All right. I'm Brianna, and in the studio with me today, I have four people from Helensview School in Northeast Portland here, And can we go ahead and go around the table and just do a little introduction, your name, and then what you do at Helen's View School? I'll start.
Well, my name's Andres Morales, and I'm one of the instructors at Helen's View School in the music studio program.
My name is Chaz Mortimer, and I'm also an instructor at Helen's View School, and also run or work with the music studio program.
It's your girl, Isis Malone. I'm a student at Helen's View School.
Hey, my name is Gabriel McClinton. I'm a student and also artist at Helen's View School.
All right, awesome. Well, we're really glad to have you here today. And mostly what we wanted to talk about is Helen's View School is kind of an alternative school in Portland, right?
Yes.
And as far as I understand it, and Chaz, I'll have you kind of clear this up for our listeners, you guys have kind of different tracks for students to follow of things that they're really interested in. And one of those tracks is the studio program that you guys do, correct?
Yeah, let me give a quick explanation about Helen's View School. It's part of the Multnomah Education Service District. And so we are a public school, but we serve schools from all over Multnomah County. So that includes Portland Public Schools, Park Rose, David Douglas, Centennial, Reynolds, Gresham, and even North Clackamas. So as far as the way the music studio fits into the program, we take most of the students are at the school early in the day, and they're doing the basic school work, the kind of the core curriculum. And then in the afternoons, there's a lot of freedom to work with the students' strengths. So we offer seminars and basically electives. And the music studio has become one of the main programs as far as seminars and electives. So it began about 8 years ago when some students who wouldn't otherwise come to school, they talked to the principal, and she was like, well, what's going to get you to come to school? Well, she went to one of their houses, and they showed her Fruity Loops, which was a program, kind of a precursor to GarageBand. It's developed on its own, too, but so we brought that into the school, and then from there, the program has blossomed into a full-fledged, you know, professional recording training program, basically.
That's amazing. That's great that you guys get that opportunity.
Yeah.
Isis and Gabe, what kind of drew you guys to the studio program at Helen's View?
Well, actually, I love to sing, first of all. And, like, when I'm going through some things, I just sit back in my room, write music. But when I came to Helen's View, I'm like, okay, they got a studio. And I'm close to everybody, and it's just comfortable when I sing. And I just sing from a diaphragm and from the heart, and it's just crazy. I don't know.
That's awesome.
As far as me, I was, I've been raised in the church. My dad, Frederick Woods, he's a pastor, and my mom, she's been playing music all of her life, so I've really just been drawn to music, even as a baby, you know, playing the drums and playing the piano and newly developed singing and rapping and everything, just trying to become more diverse and multitasking, playing the piano and singing. So it's just like, it's really fun for me. It's a great opportunity, basically, to be in the studio at Helen's View.
That's amazing. That's great that that is offered for you guys, definitely. Yeah. The electives that you, or not the electives, but the kind of core education that you guys get in the mornings, correct? Is that delivered just like you would get at any other school, or is there sort of an alternative view on that since you're an alternative school?
Well, the way I see it is, because I was a student also at Helen's View School. I graduated from Helen's View School, and now I'm working at Helen's View School. It's a little bit better. You get that one-on-one that you really need. You know what I mean? You don't get those packed classrooms where you raise your hand for 20 minutes, and by the end of the time, your question already done passed, and you didn't even get your answer question. You didn't get anything answered. So, you know, like, that's the thing about Helen's View School. You always got that one-on-one time. You know, you really don't understand just that little thing, but there's always two instructors right there to help you out. I mean, you don't got to worry about, like, oh, I can't do it. No, you will be able to do it. With our help, trust me, you'll be able to do it. That's the main awesome. Model we like to push on to our students, that, you know, like, you're not by yourself here, man. You got all of us right here to help you out. We're all trying to reach that same goal.
That's great. That's really nice that's given there, because I know a problem in a lot of high schools is, you know, you can't reach that average median, so students are there, they're going, I don't understand this thing. And by the time you get to the end of class, you don't understand any of it. Because like you said, your initial question is never answered. Did you have something you wanted to add to that, Gabe?
Yep. Helen's view from my perspective as far as based on academics and really helping us out. My perspective is I'm more of an athlete. So it's like in regular schools, they get the class done because there's a lot of kids there. And if you want to, you can go to tutoring after class. But after class, I'll have sports or work or, you know, piano lessons or something. But it's like in Helen's view, the student-teacher ratio is set just to the point where they'll give you packets and they'll give you something to work on. But at the same time, you're really getting one-on-one with the teacher, and they have more than one teacher in there that's really just there based on helping you, not really there to get more paperwork done, which would take up more time. Just really just there just to help the students. That's really their main goal, is to help the students. And I appreciate it a lot because it really helped me a lot.
That's great. So as far as the studio program itself, what do you guys do in that program? Do you make, like, full-pledged songs, or do you just do whatever you enjoy, or how does that work?
We make hit records.
Top hits.
That's what we do.
Well, the main thing we like to start them off is with the program Garage Band. We start them off with that, you know what I mean, and introduce them, like, to what would they like to do. Record a song, write their own lyrics, or how to compose a beat all in together and step by step. You know what I mean? They learn about bars, they learn about time measures and everything in between. And like first, that's how we start them off. And then after that, we get them onto the more advanced program. It's called Logic. And get them started off of that, have them recording other students and learn how to run the board, how to do all the interior work and all the external work that it takes to do in the song, and step by step.
Yeah, and basically we have about 8 stations that have MIDI keyboards hooked up to GarageBand, where we do a lot of the pre-production. So we'll compose the music there and work with the student. Either the students will do it themselves, they'll compose and work with each other to write lyrics, or either Andres or I will work with the student one-on-one. And then once kind of we got the framework for the song set up, then we'll load it in the main station. It's like a full-fledged recording studio where we have a separate vocal booth and, you know, a full-on mixing console and Logic Pro, which is a professional recording software, and that runs seamlessly with GarageBand, so we can load it in. And then, you know, with someone like Gabe, he's really like, you know, his creative process is different than maybe Isis's, so we just try and work it to how each person does it. But, you know, I think Isis was talking about she writes her lyrics when she's at home a lot of time, bring them to school, and then Gabe, I mean, his process is totally different. You want to say?
Yeah, I write songs in like 3 minutes.
That's pretty cool that you're able to bust them out like that.
Good gift.
So as I understand it, you guys actually brought in a couple of songs that you completed at the studio in Helen's View. And it looks like we're ready to listen to one of those, which Gabe did.
Shout out to my man, LeRae. He's at home right now. He's the other person on the song. Awesome. We have a group, The Dynasty, under the... our school has our own record label, Phoenix Records, you know, so...
That's awesome.
We're doing it, yeah.
That's great. All right, let's go ahead and give it a listen.
I know that it can't stay like this. I'm holding on to this relationship, cause I don't want to lose your love. Walk out that door, I'm not gonna see your face no more. Girl, I don't wanna lose. Girl, I know that it gets hard when we're together, but it's worse when we're apart. Girl, don't end this. Baby, please don't finish, girl. Just things I should've said that I didn't say. Opportunities you could've left, but girl, you stay. Baby girl, look me in the face and tell me how another man could ever take my place. Ain't no way I'ma let you leave over this fight. So baby, please stay with me and make things right. Cause girl, I know that it can't stay like this. Tryna hold on to this relationship, cause I don't wanna lose your lose your love. I know if you walk out that door, I'm not gonna see your face no more. Girl, I don't wanna lose. Baby, when we first met, you had me when you sat low. I knew you were the one for me. But now I feel like saying bye. I see the pain and hurt inside. Baby, please dry your eye. Cause you know I wanna stand by you, and I know you wanna stand by me. Baby, please don't leave my side. Cause girl, you are the only thing that keeps me sane and satisfied. So girl, I don't wanna lose your love. Baby, I'm not trying to lose.
All right, and we're back. That was a great piece. Is there anything you want to say about your song or the recording process, Gabe?
The recording process for me personally, it comes more naturally because I'm more of like an emotional artist. So it's like as far as me playing, I play most of the songs on the piano before recording them. So it's like when I can't express myself verbally, I express it through the piano, and I dissect that later, basically like getting the feel and the vibe of the piano that I feel to really put the words in order, to put the words to the song. And it comes out smooth. I might have had one or two times where there's been a glitch where I need probably two more lines. But other than that, it just flows perfectly for me.
That's great.
Yeah.
And a little bit later, we're going to be hearing a medley of a few songs. And Isis has a piece in that as well, right?
Yes.
And do you want to talk a little bit more about your kind of musical process for creating songs?
Well, I just think about all the bad things and all the pain, like, I have, basically, and everything, the bad that's going around me, and I just put it in my songs. Like, growing up, I didn't have, you know, like, a mother figure, a father figure, really. So, basically, I had to live for myself, and I just thought in my head, like, okay, well, ain't nobody else gonna do this, so I'm gonna do it. So, everything that's been happening and going on from the past, I just put them into my songs.
That's
feel the
great.
Vibe.
That's great that you have some kind of a musical release for that and ability to work that into everything else you're trying to do in your life so you can get it out, you know?
Yeah.
I personally think this is a really amazing program to be offered, especially for students. And as I understand it, it isn't just high school. Is it? What's the age range of the people in your program?
We have students from ages 12 to 21.
And are they all in classes like the electives together, or is it kind of age divided?
There's a program that we have, a special program called Futures, which is for the 18 to 21 year olds, and that really focuses on kind of preparation for the career world. It's more of a, I would say, just a light, all the different skills it takes to really you know, transition. Hold on. Do you have something to say? Okay. Well, yeah, just mostly a lot of skills just that are good for transitioning out of high school. And Gabe, you had something to say.
Also at Helen's View, there's a child care center for parents that don't really have enough money for daycare or, you know, just one trip to make, so it'll be easier for teen parents, you know, to get their kids back and forth to the same place that they are. Plus, sometimes, you know, a teen, they probably aren't really, they're not really trustworthy of too many people, you know, their child being too far for them while they're at school or something. So it's like they can focus on their work, but at the same time, you know, they can tend to their child if they need to within a couple of rooms. You know?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Personally, I can see why this is such a beneficial program, but I'd like to know your guys' take as why do you think that it's so important to have a program like this, especially the studio program?
My number one reason is because, you know what I mean, it's a gateway to positive things, you know what I mean, to express yourself in different ways, you know what I mean, physically, emotionally, and mentally.
I mean, let a lot of stress out. And with nowadays in situations with our economy, you know, it affects us youth more than anything. So I think music is the number one thing that we can have in schools because it motivates everything else. That's my point of view.
Awesome. And Chaz, did you have something to add to that? Or?
Well, just that, you know, I think the support we get from the Educational Service District, the Multnomah ESD, has been great, you know, and really I think they recognize that this is a big draw for the school, and it really helps keep students who might not otherwise continue their education, you know. It's been very successful with keeping kids focused and in school.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, we unfortunately got to wrap it up, but thank you guys for being here. And again, it's the Helens View School, MESD.K12.OR.US is the website you can find you guys under, yeah. Right? You can also Google Helens View or search Helens View.
Or the Multnomah Educational Service District.
Awesome.
Or Education Service District, sorry.
Yeah, and you can also call the school at 503-262-4150. And did you guys want to do a quick shout-out?
Man, I got all the shout-outs. Right. It's from Gabe. I want to give a shout-out to my baby Mia out there listening to me on the radio, all my family listening, my grandmother, my auntie, my man Larray. Hope you get better soon, man. We're going to be making tracks when you get back. My friend Justin and his family that's listening, tuning in, for all the support, everybody. Going to the MySpace, checking the MySpace out. That's really good.
And I would like to give a shout out to my brother and his dearly wife, my sister-in-law, Sonya Metcalf. They're my inspirations. They're ones I can lean on. And I want to thank you guys for everything. I love you.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. And now we're going to listen to the other track you guys brought. It's a medley with Isis's piece.
Posted in the club, posted with my cup, I be posted in the club.
And I do that too still.
I be posted in the club, posted with my cup, I be posted in the club.
And I do that too still.
I be posted in the club, posted with my cup, I be posted in the club.
And I do that too still.
I be posted in the club, posted with my cup, I be posted in the club.
And I do that too still.
I step up in the club and I see what I'm finna do. Hit the bar and get off some of that purple juice. Then I start my gig and tryna find me a chicken. Hit the girl like I was fishing. Do some magic like magician. The baddest one I'm picking, ain't no doubt in that.
For sure.
Haters getting mad cause that girl didn't come back. Now back to the dance floor so I can dance some more. I ain't spending that much because I don't smoke dope. About to do the two-step. If a hater wanna run up, he about to lay down and take a little rest. I ain't got beef like that, so I ain't gotta wear a vest. Dudes acting like we in school trying to get give me a test. So I'm back to the floor, posted with my cup in my hand. About to start getting do that two-step there. Till I'm falling at my pants and I stay with that cup of purple juice in my hand. I be posted in the club, posted with my cup. I be posted in the club. I be posted in the club, posted with my cup. I be posted in the club.
Okay. Next up is Natasha ponders about the fine line between the actual and the virtual, and whether it's okay to have imaginary friends. Okay, here she goes.
Last Sunday, I was walking up to my house because the bus had failed to show up once again. The sun was beating down real hard, and I was sweating. No phone, no iPod, nothing to entertain, and so I drifted off thinking pleasant thoughts and dreamland. Mostly these revolve around myself being a celebrated author, or being me version of Amanda Palmer. I fluff to my ring of imaginary friends. Well, they're not completely imagined. They exist as people in the real world, people that have names and passports, people can be physically found and have freedom of thought. But in my imagination, they're very much tailored to who I would like them to be. Exciting, understanding, good-humoured and good callbackers. My favourite imaginary friend is Micah. He's from New York and I've known him for about a year. I know Micah so well that on hot Sundays, the line between the real and the virtual melts. I find myself being annoyed at actual friends and thinking...
Okay, here's Ma, sorry.
The virtual economies of many online games and the exchange of virtual items and currency for real money has created gaming sweatshops in which workers in the developing world, typically China, earn real-world wages for long days spent monotonously performing in-game tasks, most instances typically involving farming of resources or currency.
Okay, let's try that piece again.
Micah would never have done this. Drifting and resurfacing. I'm not quite sure which way is up and which way is down, and I find myself entering a space I've designed to suit me, a dream of virtual reality. Virtual reality is a fairly young term, harking back to the 1920s, when it was first used to refer to army training pilots. In this era of computer technology and fast...
Okay, since that is not quite loud enough, we are going to do that live. So, here we go.
Hey guys, sorry, that was a bit of a technical mistake there. So I'll just quickly read this live. Last Sunday, I was walking up to my house because the bus had failed to show up once again, and the sun was beating down real hard and I was sweating. No phone, no iPod, nothing to entertain. And so I drifted off thinking pleasant thoughts in dreamland. Mostly these revolve around myself being a celebrated author or being a me version of Amanda Palmer. I fluffed to my ring of imaginary friends. Well, they're not completely imagined. They exist as people in the real world, people that have names and passports, people who can be physically found and have freedom of thought. But in my imagination, they're very much tailored to who I would like them to be. Exciting, understanding, good-humoured and good callbackers. My favourite imaginary friend is Micah. He's from New York and I've known him for about a year. I know Micah so well that on hot Sundays, the line between the real and the virtual melts. I find myself being annoyed at actual friends and thinking, Micah would never have done this. Drifting and resurfacing, I'm not quite sure which way is up, which way is down. I find myself entering a space I've designed to suit me, a dream of virtual reality. Virtual reality is a fairly young term, harking back to the 1920s, when it was first used to refer to army training pilots. In this era of computer technology and fast processing, it has come to mean a plethora of things. Asking randomers on the street, some thought it was all about Second Life and Tamagotchis. Others listed various forms of daydreaming. One man got really angry and said, virtual reality is everything that is wrong with America. It's for the weak-minded escapists. So someone like me, who dreams away and forgets that in actuality there are physical things I ought to be thinking about, like elections and poverty and getting a job. It's hard to say where the virtual stops and actuality begins, and sometimes I think that it doesn't really matter. What if someone does daydream all the time? Aren't lots of things virtual anyway? Things like justice that don't exist the way four-legged tables do? Pondering this. Justice I can't touch, can't simulate either though. A table I can touch, and a table can be simulated. I could ask some guy to write me a nice computer program where I sit behind a wooden table, chatting with my children, enjoying a Thanksgiving meal with a turkey. All of that, even though I don't have kids, don't celebrate Thanksgiving, and don't eat meat. Justice. Well, that would be an interesting simulation. Impossible, maybe, and certainly contested. No one knows what it looks like. Maybe it can't be simulated at all. Maybe none of those things can be simulated. Love, temperance, courage, hope. I see what the Jeremiad I asked about virtual reality was getting at. Maybe the virtual world is deprived of all sentimentality. Maybe it will never be able to stun the spectator with its beauty the way the Oregon coast can. Simply because in the back of our minds, we know that it isn't actually out there. Some computer genius created it. The lakes and the mountains and the trees, however. Well, that's a different story. No one knows how they got there. Virtual reality was created by a human, and so it can hardly reveal more than what its designer happens to know. Truth doesn't ride in a computer signal, and nothing virtual will ever tell you who you are.
Thank you. I'm sorry about that little... problem there. Now, here is Tiffany's piece.
You're listening to Portland's Cable 90.7 FM radio station. This is Megan. You're listening to discussing a situation that might change your health for the next few years. One day, I was sitting at home watching MTV as usual. When a commercial came on with the artist Tiger asking a girl before she was getting her tattoo if she checked the needles. So I decided to investigate the situation and dig deeper to get the information I needed. Here's a video I found on YouTube that was filmed in Australia about hepatitis C.
What is hepatitis C?
It's like a bloody, it's an STD of some description, I know that much. Isn't it something to do with the liver?
Oh, it's a disease or an infection or something like that, yeah.
I do know that it's something to do with your blood.
God, I'd say just a disease.
It's some kind of blood disease.
I know it's a disease. I don't know how it's contracted. I don't know how many people have it. I don't know what the cure is. Don't know much about hepatitis C at all, actually.
It's a bad disease, man.
Not really. It make you die or something.
It's a sort of strain of an influenza.
I thought it was an illness that could be contracted through saliva and food contamination.
Is it a transmitted session? I'm probably showing myself up as not knowing much, but I seriously have no idea.
Hepatitis C is a bloodborne virus that causes liver inflammation. Over a quarter of a million Australians have been exposed to the hepatitis C virus. How do you get hepatitis C?
STD-wise, maybe sex, fluid transmission.
Mostly through needles and saliva.
Maybe through bodily fluids or something.
Yeah, well, I think through contamination of food utensils or other items like that.
Maybe by some fly or...
Is STI, I think.
Isn't that like overseas or like syringes or something?
Like sharing needles and open wounds in places that are not clean.
No, is it?
Probably sexually. Yeah.
Is that the one where you can get by kissing? Can you get it by kissing?
I don't know, mate. Wouldn't have a clue.
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
I guess it's the STD, sexual transmission, blood and that kind of stuff. But again, I don't really know.
Blood transfusions? Not sure. Sexual transmission, perhaps? Don't know.
Sex. Unprotected. Yeah, I'm not that sure.
For hepatitis C to be transmitted from one person to another, infected blood needs to get into the bloodstream of another person. Two of the most common ways people get hepatitis C in Australia are sharing drug injecting equipment and undergoing unsterile tattooing or body piercing. Because hepatitis C is only spread via blood-to-blood contact, it's not generally considered sexually transmissible. What happens to a person if they do get hepatitis C?
Oh, I reckon you'd be crook as a dog.
Well, you get very sick, obviously. I don't think it can kill you, though, but I really don't know.
I should think it must affect your kidneys in the end.
I know it stays with you your whole life, doesn't it?
I don't have any idea.
Honestly, I've got no idea.
But to be honest, I don't know a lot about it. I think I've had my injection for one of them. But other than that, I don't even know a lot about it.
My understanding, which isn't very much, is that it affects your immune system.
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Wouldn't have a clue. Oh, don't know. Not sure.
For some reason, I think it has minimal effects. I think you can live pretty much a normal life. I don't think it's life-threatening.
Tiba, what happens to you when you have hepatitis C, maybe?
It's the inflammation of the liver, right? So your liver basically, you know, just giving up.
It's internal organs, I'm not
honest,
sure.
I'm not 100% sure, but I know it's curable.
Like, wouldn't it just, like, kill you?
Hepatitis C can potentially result in liver cancer, but current therapies mean between 50 and 80% of people living with hepatitis C can be cured. Common symptoms of chronic hepatitis C infection include things like fatigue or tiredness, feeling ill after drinking alcohol or eating fatty food, headaches, and mood swings.
I read in an article that there are a few ways to get HCV, hepatitis C virus. In fact, one way is by using a used needle, and more people can attract this virus when they get a tattoo. Over the week, I interviewed a couple people who have been around tattoo artists, and we talked about tattoos in general and a little bit about Hep C. My first interview was with a guy named Chris, who is the owner of Colorbond Tattoo. Let's listen to our conversation. So how long have you guys been in this area?
Like probably a year and 2 months now.
And how do you become a tattoo artist?
Well, I don't know. I went to art school, and when I got out of art school, I was trying to sell paintings and kind of fell into tattooing and realized that I could make money off of it and do my artwork at the same time. So,
How old do you have to be to get a tattoo?
18 years old.
18? And have you ever worked on somebody younger or...
I have when I tattooed up in Idaho and down in California, and so there's different laws down there and up there, you know, different than Oregon's. So I think it's like 16 or 17 with parental consent or something like that.
But. And with your younger customers, do they ask about clean needles?
I know most of them are pretty, they ask a lot of questions. They're pretty concerned about what's going on.
Do you talk to teens about getting or not getting tattoos?
Not really. I don't know. Because, I mean, you know, in the state of Oregon, they're, you know, underage people aren't really allowed to get tattoos, so we don't really have a whole lot of underage teenagers coming into the shop. The ones we do have, you know, usually the youngest would probably be about 18 to 19 years old. At that point, you know, I'm usually talking them into getting the tattoo, so.
Does anybody come in to check if the needles are clean, the floor is clean, or?
We get a checkup by the health board, like, a couple times a year, and, you know, if a customer wants to see everything, we'll take them on a little tour and show them how everything's done and, you know, show them that we are legit and clean, ready to go.
That's good. So why do you think people get tattoos?
I have no idea. We've been doing it forever. Ever since, you know, there's recorded history that people have been tattooing themselves. So I don't really know why.
Okay. Well, I see you have, like, a couple of yourself. So where did you get yours done, or did you do them yourself?
No, I had my friends do them. I did a couple myself, but, they're on my legs, you know, kind of when I was first starting out or whatnot, but, mainly got them done out in California.
So could you describe to me, like, this one I see here, like, what does that mean?
It doesn't really mean anything. It's from a painter. It's a reproduction from a painting, from Mark Ryden. Just really liked his artwork and just wanted to wear it, so.
Do you always check needles around if, like, you're not doing it yourself or somebody else does and that you don't know?
Yeah, I make sure that I go into a safe spot for sure, and someone that knows what they're doing. I mean, that's why I don't really have a whole lot of tattoos on me right now either, because I'm kind of picky about what I put on me, so.
Well, thanks for the time. This is Mickey from KBOO 90.7 FM at Color Bombs Tattoo on 8th and Burnside. Thank you. All right, that was Chris from Colorbond Tattoo, which is located on 800 East Burnside. Now we're going to take a look at my second conversation that was from another tattooist, which was a guy named Ryan who works at Scapegoat Tattoo. So let's listen in on that. So how long have you been working here?
I've been tattooing here for almost 2 years.
2 years? And have you had any... You know, complaints about your needles from your customers?
No, not at all. It's, it's, you know, everything's great here.
And so how did you become a tattoo artist?
Long story short, a friend of mine hooked me up with a guy to teach me how to tattoo back in New Hampshire. I did an old-fashioned apprenticeship and kind of swept and mopped floors for a year, and then they started to show me some stuff. So it took a while.
Have you ever done a tattoo on somebody younger than 18?
No, it's always been illegal everywhere I've been. There's a few states where you can, where somebody under 18 can get tattooed with parental consent, but I've never worked in one of those states, and honestly, I don't think I would ever tattoo anybody under 18, even if it was legal. It's a bad idea. I don't think anybody would really want anything permanently on them from the time that they're 16 to 18. It's not going to really stay that long, I don't think.
Why do you think people get tattoos?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it varies so much from person to person. You know, sometimes it's just something that they like. Sometimes it has a really deep meaning to them or something like that. It's just there's so many varying reasons to do it. I mean, I think it all comes down to just liking it and being interested in it. There used to be a little bit more of a taboo with tattooing and things like that, but nowadays sometimes it can be almost like a fashion statement. But you know, there's always going to be people who just really like the art of tattooing and like the experience that it gives, all like the whole experience of living as a tattooed person is different than not. So I think they just like the lifestyle.
That was Ryan from Scapegoat Tattoo, which is located on 1223 Southeast Stark Street. The word tattoo comes from a Samoan group, which means tatau, which means to mark or strike twice. Most people choose to have tattoos for decorative purposes. To them, it's another way to express not only your personality, but also your body and what you believe in. Next up is a customer named Selena who was getting her first tattoo, and I caught her at the exact moment. So, are you nervous?
A little bit. It might hurt.
It might hurt. So, what kind of tattoo are you trying to get? Like, can you describe it for me?
I'm going to get a tattoo of a female queen-like figure with a tree in the back. The tree represents the tree of life, and the woman represents wisdom.
Are you going to ask the tattooers if the needles are clean?
No, because I trust this place. I know that it's a reputable tattoo parlor, so I'm not going to really sweat all that.
Okay, well, thanks for your time. Yep. Bye. That was a customer named Selena from Scapegoat Tattoo. Next up, we have Miss Brianna, who I will be explaining to the importance of HCV, hepatitis C virus, and giving the 411 to our listeners. So, Brianna, how do you feel about HCV, hepatitis C virus?
I should know more about hepatitis because I'm a lifeguard and certified in first aid. But honestly, I'm not that familiar with it.
Yeah. It's become a bigger situation in the world, like, actually the whole world, not just yeah. the United States, but Europe, especially Australia and everything. Oh. And, you know, one of the main few ways to get it is by needles.
Yeah.
And the reason I pick tattoos is because there's so many, you know, needles in those stores, and people yeah. aren't checking, you know, asking to check the needles anymore, you know, like usually, because they're beginning to, like, you know, if they're close to the person, you know, they'll trust them either other way. So that's why I brought you in today to, you know, since you had tattoos. And yeah. I was just going to ask, yeah. So, when you got your first tattoo, did you ask about the needles?
Actually, the first tattoo that I got, I didn't have to. The person who gave me my tattoo was actually good friends with the person who pierced my nose several years previous. And so I had been to the place before, which is why I went there for a tattoo, and I knew that it was a clean facility. And they're really good about talking to the whoever they're piercing or tattooing and saying, you know, like, okay, this is what's going on. I'm going to get a clean needle. They had sterile needles there. They showed me, you know, they had a proper disposal place for use needles, and so they kind of talked through that whole process, so I didn't have to say, hey, you know, yeah. Has that needle been used on anyone else or just me? So that was really, really nice.
Okay. So, like, when you first walked into the shop, was it a clean shop or was it, you know?
Honestly, it's not the cleanest looking shop. It's in an older building in, you know, a not as well kept up part of town. It was in Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's not like the sparkling, clean, white walls,
yeah.
You know, sterile environment looking type place. But it definitely is, you know, you can tell that it's a cleaner place. Like, they have the little biohazard boxes for needle disposal in all of their rooms, and, you know, non-latex rubber gloves. Yeah. And
so they were pretty organized.
Yeah, they're definitely, like, organized, and it's not like, hey, come into my basement and I'll give you a tattoo, you know. So...
there are over 180 million people worldwide who are infected with HCV, hepatitis C virus. 4 million of those are in the United States. I read that for every one person that is infected with AIDS, there are more than four infected with HCV. Up to 26,000 new HCV cases appear in the U.S. every year and causes more than 10,000 deaths each year. For my last interview, I had to get someone that was from both sides, a customer and an artist. So I sat down with a woman named Hannah, and this was our conversation. Just to get started, so I see you have tattoos on your arm. They look pretty cool. So where did you get your tattoos done?
Most of my tattoos have been done by different friends. This one is kind of... it's a black, mostly black work design, and I drew the design, and it's kind of a harpy lady. It's like a winged bird lady, and for a while I was just really into drawing variations on that theme. And my friend Russo, who has a tattoo shop in Mexico City, did that for me.
Wow. Does it have a meaning to it?
Well, in all different cultures, there are variations on sort of a mythical winged warrior woman, whether it's like Harpy or even Angel or Valkyrie. And there are Egyptian bird goddess women. And I haven't done all of the research about it, but for a while I just started being really attracted to that symbology of this strong, fierce woman god that can fly and is really powerful and beautiful, and it was just something that I was drawing a lot, and so I've got a couple of tattoos that incorporate that image.
Cool. So did you like draw most of them?
Most of my tattoos I drew, and then have had friends, most of my tattoos I've either had friends do the work or I've done myself some of them.
That's cool. Like, when you got your tattoos done, did you ask tattooers the last time they cleaned their needles?
I didn't, but part of that was because it was friends that I was working with, and particularly my friend Russo, who did that tattoo, he showed me a lot about tattooing. And so he showed me the whole process, and I saw how he sterilized his needles, and what he did and what a lot of tattooists that I've known do is that they don't reuse the same actual needles. They'll reuse the tubes that the needles pass through,
yeah,
and they'll reuse the bars that they solder the needles to. But most tattooists, I think it's pretty standard to only reuse the actual needles on the same client. And if you're working with the same person, if you're saving them because you're going to finish for another session or something. And a lot of times they don't even do that. But so it's pretty standard practice to break off the needles after the session and then sterilize the needle bars and the tubes. And because he was my friend and was showing me stuff and had been working with him, I saw that whole process. So I didn't have a conversation per se. But
so you told me earlier that you used to do tattoos. Tell me about that.
Well, my friend Russo taught me some things about doing tattoos about 10 years ago. And one of my best friends had also been starting to do tattoos. And so we did some tattoos on each other. And it's one of those things, I think it's changed a little bit now with the internet. But when I was starting to learn, it was one of those industries that still kept secret. And it's still very male dominated and kind of old boys like style of not wanting to share secrets. Like anybody could be a competitor.
Yeah.
And so my friend Russo was really different from that. And he was really open and showed me what he was doing and taught me some stuff. And I also did a while later, I did a internship or like an apprenticeship at a place in Austin, Texas, where it was really different. Because in most places, you have to be licensed to tattoo.
Yeah.
And most places, you have to go through a licensed apprenticeship program, which are generally really expensive. And I went to this place in Texas that was one of the few places that sort of had an formalized program. Because most places, it's you find somebody who's willing to work with you and you work with them. And I kind of wish I had done that and found sort of more of a mentor who I could work more one-on-one with. But I went with this apprenticeship program that was supposed to be a two-year program. And I was there about 2 months, and I was one of the senior people who was there at that point. I saw people last between 2 hours and 2 days in a program that was supposed to be 2 years because it was just really burnout. You know, we would work 60 hours a week, and most of the time we weren't making much money. And then out of our checks, we were supposed to be paying these fees. They wanted some money up front for it, which I didn't have, and I'm glad that I didn't because it just wasn't worth it. I don't know how much to get into this. I learned a lot of things. It was interesting to work in a street shop where people just came in off of the street. It was on 6th Street in Austin, Texas, which is where pretty much there's bars and there's tattoo shops.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, thank you, Tiffany. And now my piece on virtual reality. My name is Zoe Lerncher, and this month's show on the Underground, as you know, is called Virtual Reality. In case you didn't exactly know what virtual reality is, it's kind of like, to make a long story short, things like computer games and video games. Virtual reality can be addicting, so really virtual reality is a kind of drug. Of course, the virtual world can also be fun. How can it be addicting, you ask? Well, virtual reality is, as I said, things like video games and computer games. But virtual reality is also things like online dating and World of Warcraft, or even things like MySpace and Facebook. How many times a day do you check your email? Exactly my point. My brother is what I like to call living in the virtual world. He goes on to things like Mech Quest and Dragon Fable and Adventure Quest. He, like most people that play these kinds of games, is getting sucked up into the virtual world and becoming just another character in a game. You should have seen him when the power went out. He couldn't play the computer or watch TV for 4 hours, and he almost died. People use virtual reality for different reasons. Some people are lonely and use online dating services to make friends. Others use WoW, World of Warcraft, because they are not happy with their own lives and use virtual reality to cover their own lives up and make them new in a game. Others spend time in Facebook or MySpace just because it is a way to spend your extra time, but once you start, you can't stop. Others do it all for fun. My dad creates an online dating service, and some people do it for fun, but others call and ask him to delete their account because they married a person they met on the dating service. So some things about the virtual world are wonderful and successful. So if you are one of those people and are just playing in virtual reality for fun, enjoy real reality and virtual reality forever. Thank you. Now, here's Annie.
Thanks, Zoe. That was very interesting. I'm surprised that your dad does like programming for online dating services. That's pretty cool. Anyways, we are just about out of time, but we would just want to say thank you for listening to The Underground. The Underground is hosted every fourth Wednesday by the KBOO Youth Collective. We meet every Wednesday at KBOO at 6 p.m. to plan our show. If you're interested in getting involved, come on down or call our youth advocate, Aaron Yankee, at 503-231-8032. Extension 221, or email advocate at kbu.org. We also do a music show, Youth Randomonium, the last Friday of every month, so this Friday, the 25th, from 11 to midnight. We're always looking for new music by anyone under 21 of any style. Check out our website at kbooyouth.org. Next up is Guess Who's Coming to Radio with Jamila. I'm Annie, and thank you for listening.
Are you a KBOO member? Do you have the skills and vision that would be great to put to use on KBOO's board of directors? KBOO is seeking candidates to be considered in this year's board election. Each year, we hold an annual meeting at which we elect members of the board of directors. This year, our annual meeting will be on Sunday, September 28th. To run for the board, you will need to furnish a statement.